Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayler Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavars. Thanks for joining us for not only episode 78, but our fifth year in the chairs, behind the microphone. And mate, it's great to be back for a new year.
It's great to be back, Adam. It's amazing how quick time has gone. 2014 was when we started. It's amazing, isn't it?
Unbelievable. We've grown a lot. In some ways we haven't.
But talked about new topics, talked about old topics, and I'm sure that 2018 will be the same, Adam. But it's nice to be able to get in the chair early on in the term. Yes. It's only week three for us, isn't it?
It is week three. And I know for us there's some change. I know for you, you're back up in grade six again this year where you were last year, and you're leading that team, correct?
Correct. Didn't have to move offices, Adam, either, but I've got two new staff who have come from outside the school. Her first year in the job, so it's really good to have some fresh faces around. Always keeps the place vibrant.
It does. And I've moved back up to 5-6 after three years back in 1-2. Not leading the team this year, I'm leading the student wellbeing, which is terrific. And very lucky, the last couple of years I've had some great teams, but this year I've got a great team of two other teachers who I've taught with a lot in the past and had a lot to do with. So it's been smooth sailing. I know there's a bit of difference, you know, when you have that new staff member come in, it's really exciting, but you have to show them the ropes a little bit and things. Whereas it's kind of been such a smooth transition to come in. You know how everyone's thinking and the planning and all those things, and it's just been able to get going really, really well.
That's great, Adam. Have you noticed, we talked about this last year, have you noticed a change in your language and your tone of voice and the speed of your voice, or has it just been like getting on a bike again with teaching years?
Kind of. I think 5-6s didn't scare me coming up. I know for some people who've never taught it, it's a little bit scary with the egos and the attitudes and things, but I think the biggest thing is, am I talking to them like 5-6s or am I talking to them like 1-2s? Mm. And that's been the biggest change for me is, you know, 1-2s need a little bit more of that explanation and support. 5-6s don't need that. And I'm worried. Am I waffling on too much? And they're going, come on, mate. We're ready to go. We want to get back. So the big difference for me, though, is that they don't even go to the toilet.
Yes.
But the 1-2s constantly, can I go to the toilet? Yeah, off you go. They just don't. There's a couple in mine who might go once a day.
Yeah, they work it out there.
There's a large chunk I don't think I've sent at all yet. Mm. And that's just nice because it doesn't disrupt the class, so that's been a nice change. And joking around with them and doing those things, it's a bit different up there with the 5-6s. So yeah, it's been a nice change to go back.
I'd love to hear from any high school teachers, listeners out there about the comparisons between Year 7 and teaching VCE. Mm. With the way that you speak, because obviously with the VCE you're talking to adults. Year 7, you're kind of talking to Year 6s, particularly early in the year. But I do wonder, I reckon maybe that my guess would be they'd be a bit closer together almost, because we almost tend to talk to some of our Year 6s a little bit like adults. You really do. Mature. And
The transition wouldn't be as big. I know a friend of mine's just started teaching down here in Geelong at a high school, and he's got a Year 7 homeroom, and he said the first day he just had 23 boys sitting at him like scared rabbits. They were just absolutely packing themselves. And you've got to actually really build them up and do those confidence things, whereas the year 11s and 12s, you know, it's old rope, you know, for them, they're turning up and doing it. So, but start of the year two, mate, everyone turns into a bit of a maniac at the start of the year, and you get the things of, you get my email and all those things like that. It's just stuff flying everywhere.
You saw me go, I think I just gave it, I didn't even mean that, but I just went, because it's the term one rush. And I think I'm almost making the decision, Adam, that term one is not one of my favourites. So you're right, you get the, did you get my email? Can I just see you for a minute? And dare I say it, knee-jerk reactions to lots of things that are happening, you know, something new that's come from up above.
Yep.
You've got new members in the team who have been in your team before, want to try something else. It's just constant. I don't know about you, but my head is feeling full after barely 3 weeks.
It is, and I think for 5-6 teachers, it's tough because there's so much else there as well to organise and do. And I know for us, we were talking about, as a team, saying we've got 10 jobs that are half done. Now, we kind of get going on this one, and then another one crops up, and another one crops up. It's like, you know the plates? You know the spinning plates? You're trying to keep all these spinning plates going, and you're at a couple and they're going really well, and then you turn around, there's this one that's about to fall. You go to that one and keep going with that one. It is a little bit like that at the start of the year.
Juggling lots of things, and I already feel like, and it's a great year level where I teach at year six, but there's so many extracurricular, maybe not necessarily extracurricular, there are a few of those, but just extra things that are part of that program that you're already juggling, like you said. And the core business is, although it's kind of, you're trying to put it at the forefront, it's not really at the forefront at the moment.
And that's, before we move on to our topics for tonight, that's the one thing I'm going to miss from 1-2 was pretty much every term I taught, turned up and I taught. I turned up and 9 o'clock, we did everything we needed to do, 3:30 we went home, whereas we're already looking by week 5, from week 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, we've got at least one day out every week for the rest of the term. And that impacts on their learning and the things you want to do so much.
It does. And I guess if we turn it on its head and look at a positive, the 1-2s, that's what they need, don't they?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Teaching, you know, 100%. And getting used to being little humans. Yep. So I guess with year 6, there's a lot more independence. So they got to learn to maybe juggle things a little bit more. I'm looking at it in a positive way here that, you know, yeah, I've got my academic side, but there's so many other things that I need to be doing. Because that's what adults, that's what we do in our lives, don't we? So exactly. I guess, you know, you could look at it that way.
Absolutely. So we've got 3 topics to get through tonight, as always, with the and the things ever said in the staff room and an anecdote as well. So without further ado, let's get going.
Let's get going.
So, Rick, to go on from the opener from tonight, the first topic we want to discuss is, while the beginning of the year is hectic and there's a lot going on, I wanted to talk about some positives that kick off the start of the year and things that we enjoy and things we see from day one that, as a teacher, give you a lift. And I know for me, coming back up into 5-6, there is a little bit of worry. Now, going from 1-2 to 5-6, I was a little bit nervous making that transition. I mean, that's a big one. I'm going from having fresh kids who are still 5
yes.
to having some kids who have just turned 12. I mean, that's a 7-year, that's a big difference in abilities and personalities and all those sorts of things. But it really came to me today that I had a big win today with the kids where it was something as simple as we'd set up our expectations for reading and we did some independent reading. They've chosen their books and they're doing that sort of stuff. And for 35 minutes, while I did 4 conferences, you could have heard a pin drop. 35 minutes. Some got up and filled out their first reading response. I had a few kids jotting a few things down, the ideas and main things that did it off their own bat, the initiative and things like that. And I actually stopped at the end and got them to high-five each other and told them how proud I was. Just to see them follow through on those things and read so well. It was such a positive. And for me, at 9 o'clock was when it started to go to 10 o'clock. I thought, the rest of the day is just going to be fantastic. And we just built on that for the day. And I know sometimes at the start of the year, the kids can be a little bit, for lack of a better term, feral.
Yep.
So to see them get into that in you know, really, just their, we've only been at school a fortnight,
that's,
really.
That's all about you, what you're doing there. Though. That's the expectations that you're setting. You know, like they can be a bit off balance maybe at the start of the year, but it's what we set. It's the climate that we help set.
Absolutely. So I wanted to sort of throw to you to say that some positives at the start of the year, not so much necessarily positives, but things you look forward to doing that always you go, oh, always at the start of the year, I love doing this or I love changing that or, you know, those opportunities that do arise in a hectic time of the year.
No, it's good. It's a good way to look at it because it's very easy as you're going around your workplace at this time of the year for people to maybe go to the negative first because we're under the pump.
Definitely.
So it's easy for that to happen. So, well, I remember talking to a colleague once who was pregnant and was going on maternity leave at the end of the term. Mm. So they didn't have a like they were working for that term. They didn't have a classroom for that term.
Yep.
They were kind of acting as sort of an assistant coach kind of thing. So it was a role that was kind of developed at the last minute, I guess, for that person. And I was talking to them early in the term and they said, you know what, you know, even though I'm leaving, you know, to have my baby at the end of this term, I'm really missing that those things that you do with the classroom. Like I kind of feel like I don't really belong anywhere.
Mm.
And so, and you know, looking at that, it is that building the relationships and having the regular stuff. And you touched on some of them about setting up your reading class. They're the things it's fun getting to know a new bunch of kids.
Absolutely. And how they tick.
Yeah. And I think for me, you know, that's like whatever role you move into, if you keep climbing the ladder in education, I reckon you would miss just that, having a classroom, having your 20-odd students in front of you and getting to know them and having those little odd moments, whether it's a laugh or even the tough moments when you've got to have those, which I even had a few today, a few difficult conversations with a few kids who are, you know, just you know, you just got to have those conversations to help get them on side. And so I think that's something that, you know, it's good, even when things get tough, it's kind of an interesting job still, isn't it?
It is. And it's just the things at the start of the year. Like, I think you're right in that it's fresh. And they're kids that maybe you haven't had before. Like, I've got a lot of kids this year that I haven't really taught before.
Yeah, me too.
Do you have, I don't know about your school, maybe it's just something we do at our school, where every unit will come up with a topic that they base a lot of the things that they do of the year on at the start of every year. So, for example, I think the one-twos this year, we've got busy bees, you know, and that sort of stuff. For us in the 5-6s, we've based our theme on Willy Wonka and, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So we've changed it to the 5-6s and the Learning Factory. And we've based a lot of our reward system around Willy Wonka. So for good behaviour, you get a golden ticket. Mm. And the golden ticket goes in a house box, and then you get a little dot on yours that will eventually become rewards. And we've had an absolute ball setting that up and seeing the kids taking the initiative to earn themselves golden tickets and to follow the expectations and lead the school as well. You can see them wanting to do the right thing and have that positive impact on the school. It's been absolutely brilliant. And setting things up. I mean, my wife, who did 2 years of teaching and then sort of wanted to go in another direction, she loves helping me set things up. So she did name tags as Wonka bars and, you know, putting up colours in the room, you know, the purple and the yellow and doing some of those sorts of things that just, you have a clean classroom, you look around and go, how good is this? It's fresh, ready to start some new things. And I think if you have that mentality, it goes on to the kids as well. They walk into that room and they feel that vibrancy and that positivity and that excitement. Mm-hmm. And they're already ready to go. You've already done 50% of the job. Yeah. And it's just getting them into those routines and things that's the next step.
Yeah, I think all schools have their own way, don't they? I mean, that's a really interesting way. We've got lots of kind of different things that we do, I think. I know that many of the teams in our school are going to use, if you're speaking about a theme, an overall skill that will inform everything they do across reading, writing and maths. And it could be look, not a skill, more like a trait, so gratitude, you know. How are we going to incorporate that across our curriculum? So it'd be gratitude, mindfulness, those sorts of things to I think some people call them soft skills, you know. Some people get them confused with soft skills and executive skills, but those things that we often do like impart to the kids, but we don't necessarily talk explicitly about it. Yeah, just being grateful. And because that's all part of being. And then we know this is coming into the curriculum more now with respectful relationships and all this sort of stuff. So to me, that's really important. And to be able to actually explicitly talk about and teach that sort of side of things rather than academic is really exciting as well.
Yeah, it's great. So what we want to throw out to you, to our listeners, what's something positive for you at the start of the year? We've probably been back at school a fortnight. Well, we're into week three, but we've been here a fortnight. What's something that you've just sat back and gone, that's just brilliant, or I love setting this up, or I love doing that? Drop us a comment on the Facebook page, because we love to have that discussion with you guys out there as well. And we want to put that back out to you guys this year, that, you know, leave a comment, and because we'd love to get back to you and talk more about it. So if you've had something positive happen or something that you just love doing at the start of the year, please let us know.
Well, Adam, over the last few weeks, you know, you're always on the lookout for something in the news, like we always are, that might get our interest for the podcast. And this one is coming from left field, but a lot of our readers may have seen it. It was in a lift out from one of the Melbourne newspapers, and the heading was about it said "Welcome to the Jungle." Nothing to do with the Guns N' Roses.
Nothing with Axl Rose there.
No, I don't think so. But it's about a Bali school, Adam. So a school in Bali, in the middle of the jungle, that has, it's called the Green School. In fact, I think that's actually its title, Bali's Green School. And it's populated by a lot of expat families, expat parents, wealthy Western families. So people who have looked for, I guess, a jungle change or a Bali change in their life, or might be working in Indonesia, or some people who are just looking for something radical to do for a period of time. And the article, I thought, well, I'm going to read this because, you know, often you hear about interesting schools around the globe that are doing one thing or another that's, you know, bucking the trend a little bit. And I thought, this might be it. But I know that you've got a few comments on the article, which I'll throw to you shortly. But self-sustainability is where this school's at. But it's interesting because the same old message is there, is that it's supposed to equip students for this uncertain future. Now, this is something that we talk about in all the professional development that we do in here in Victoria in our jobs, is that how do we equip kids in 20 years for these jobs that maybe don't exist yet? This one takes it, I guess, a little step further. I grant them that having a green school, there's a lot of the stuff they talk about the sustainability. I mean, the buildings themselves are made of bamboo. Even the basketball backboards are quite amazing. There's a couple of photos, and I think good luck to them in that way. And certainly, I think kids, there's a lot of project-based stuff. I think there's a comment by one of the teachers there saying that, you know, in a lot of schools or mainstream schools, you know, you might read about how a bridge is made. You might use some, minor materials to make a model. Here, the kids make the bridge. It says that it's a real, there's lots of sound. For highly sensitive kids, it's not a great school because there's a lot going on. There's animals everywhere. There's, you know, the sounds of the jungle. It is right smack bang in the jungle. I struggle with the snakes, Adam. Apparently, there's been the odd snake that comes in.
I've read about that.
I know that you found it interesting, but it's, you know, an immersive green school. The only thing that I had a problem with, and we'll post the article on our blog, is that there's a lot of talk from the parents. There's a lot of talk from parents and the teachers about the ethos behind the school. I don't hear a lot of comments from the kids so much in this article. And yeah. what concerns me is this, and I've got to be careful here, but a little bit about, you know, these parents making this big call about, you know, we don't like mainstream education. Mm. This, you know, let's go and completely change things up. But this is our call. You know, this is not the kids having a hold of this. And I just wonder, it's clearly for wealthy families. What did you make of it?
Look, I think if you take the idea of it in isolation, what they're doing, I think it's terrific. I mean, to show them how to make, you know, how to build bridges. They talk about how things like that they, the year four students actually took out a loan to buy chickens and now raise them and sell their eggs to actually learn about economics and pay some of that, you know, pay that money back and do those things. In isolation, it's brilliant. I think the push from schools these days is that we want more of that inquiry-based learning. That's, you know, that problem-solving and giving the kids the opportunity to do that.
Well, it sounds to me that a big part of the education here is that the kids are a part of maintaining the school.
Yes, yeah, definitely, which is brilliant, isn't it? Because in life, the kids aren't taught that enough. And I know that there's been articles previously and suggestions that we need more of that thing simply about things like budget and that in school, teaching kids how to budget and do those sorts of things, which is vitally important. But I think if you look at the whole picture, and as you say, there's a lot of comments from parents, I find the idea annoying, and I find the idea of the school, I feel it's very short-sighted. How long are they going to be able to sustain this? I think, and as you say, it's a lot of these rich Western families that have gone over there. Are they going to actually survive over there? Are they really going to enjoy it over there? It just kind of, if this was the way to go, more schools and things would be doing it. But I just don't see how it's maintainable. I think it's hard to put in words. I know you want to add some more to that. It's hard for me to put into words, but it's just the idea of it itself on its own is good, but the school and the way the parents talk about it and the way they go about it just, it rubs me the wrong way. And I don't quite know, I know we're on a podcast, we need to use our words, but I don't quite know how to put that into words.
Well, it's interesting that it's very heavy in the article on, as you say, expat Western families. But the student body consists of 435 kids, and they range from preschool to high school, 35 nationalities. So there's certainly a multicultural aspect to the school. I know there is a small contingent of Balinese there, from what I gathered. Yeah, I think you've got a good point. Is this just an isolation school, and then what happens when you leave? But I guess if it's covering preschool to high school, perhaps there's families that are going to see this through all the way through. They do acknowledge the local traditions there. I know they have ceremonies that mark time during the year that match with Balinese traditions and Balinese religious ceremonies. One of them involved animal sacrifice, and one of the teachers did say that they removed that part. The author of the article said that they saw one of those old choose your own adventure books in the library there, and they said that almost sums up what they could see going on around. Mm. That it really looked like that. So I mean, I'd be intrigued to visit.
Yeah.
But I wanted to hear more from the kids in this article. Yeah. Adam.
Is it taking the idea of choosing your own adventure too far? Are we giving the kids too much autonomy? I'm finding it really difficult. I mean, because I'm torn, because there is some great stuff in there, but
I think it is in the vein of Steiner schools. John and Cynthia Hardy, who are the couple that began the school when they moved to Bali. I think it's mentioned that you can't help but not see some of the spirit of Rudolf Steiner, who is, I think, the man behind the Steiner education. That holistic approach, non-academic, experiential learning. I guess it's different to us, isn't it, Adam?
It is, and look, it does talk about, you know, wanting to set up our next generation of leaders, requiring not necessarily maths or literature or history, but having that wider set of tools that, you know, adaptability, teamwork, flexibility, and those things, which I get and I understand, but I still think they're almost taking it too far. Is it to the point where, you know, the kids chuck a big tanty and they just get their own way, and they deal with it in a manner that teaching them to, you know, because I know that there are schools that outside of the mainstream that do that and let them go off and do those things and they get their own way. Are we teaching them to go too far? I mean, I probably need to look more into it, but it just, there's something about it that rubs me the wrong way.
I think, just to finish off, that, you know, you'd like to think with all the, with the entire ethos of this school, is that I think surely they would be releasing, sending off kids once they're done who certainly have an understanding of what's good about the planet and what we need to do to save the planet, look after the environment. I think you probably couldn't argue against that. I think they would probably have that. So if you have, we'll put the article on the blog. And if you know of any other schools around the globe that are bucking the trend and are quite different in their approach to education and even their location, such as a jungle, we'd love to hear them. Things never said in the staff room. Excuse me, everyone. Excuse me. Just a little bit of quiet. Excuse me. Yep. Look, look. Before we get into the meeting, I was just wondering if everyone's, and I'm sure you'll be fine, if everyone's okay if we just go over time and go an extra half an hour tonight on the meeting. Thanks very much, everyone. Things ever said in the staff
room. So, Rick, for our third topic tonight, we're going to harken back a little bit to reading, and we're going to talk a little bit about an article that was in The Age that the new children's laureate is Maurice Gleitzman. And before we even get into talking a little bit about that, have you read much of his stuff over the years, Rick?
Yeah, I've read a few things, Adam, and but I've had loads of students who have read Maurice Gleitzman books. For those, any listeners outside the country, Maurice Gleitzman, really well-known Australian author in Australia, has written loads of novels and I think a few picture storybooks as well. And yeah, he was recently nominated as Australia's new Children's Laureate for 2018.
And I was a big fan as a kid. One of my favourite books growing up was 2 Weeks with the Queen, which was the one that put him on the map a little bit. And I had ones like Worrywart and Puppy Fat and things, all those sorts of stories. And they were really well written, particularly for you know, a boy my age of, you know, grade 6, grade 7, year 8, all that sort of stuff. He was really interesting to read, and easy to read, but it was engaging. And I think with our kids these days, reading is getting harder and harder to engage kids on. And I know that that's something that he touched on. They had a bit of an interview with him about reading and the importance of stories and the messages that are within them. And I know you wanted to talk a little bit about that from a teacher's perspective as well.
Yeah, well, I know a lot of my students, particularly the older students I've taught over the years, have read Gleitzman's Felix series, or some other people might know it as the Once series, about little Felix who is a very resourceful orphan and struggles to survive in Poland during the Nazi occupation. And, you know, there's threats to the characters' lives in that book. And I want to touch on that aspect, you know, like young characters having threats to their life happen to them in books. I want to touch on that in a minute. But I just want to firstly touch on the power of story, Adam, because Gleitzman in the article is just reflecting on the fact of how story is even more important, in his words, to kids these days and to students than it ever was. And part of that, he says, is down to the fact that there's nothing now that adults can really keep from their kids, you know, in terms of news or what's happening in the world. And there's so many reasons, and I won't go through all of them because I think we know what they are, but social media, social networking. And I hark back to 2001 when I was doing some volunteer work before I went to university. I've mentioned this in previous podcasts, that I was at a school one day with a friend watching him teach to get a feel of the classroom. And the week that I was there was, on one of the days that week was September 11th.
Oh, wow.
And to me, that was a real turning point in what I understood with kids coming to school, because every kid that walked into that class that day had been up watching it on TV and seeing their parents hysterical or worried or what have you. And as a child, I don't remember that, Adam. You know, you might have watched the news maybe or seen it in the background. This was right on there. And this was before social media went bang. This is 2001. You know, it really wasn't until about 2005-ish, you know, where had MSN, and then Twitter came along a little bit after that, and Facebook. This was really big. And now I think, to you know, now, Adam, not only do you have video footage on the news, but with all those social networks, if parents aren't letting their kids on their social networks, the kids are getting it from their friends and also seeing their parents flick through their newsfeed. So Gleitzman's kind of saying, you know, you can't keep this from the kids. So our job as parents and as teachers is to how to help them navigate it, and to how to help them see that life can be okay and that they can contribute, and that things are and maybe not so bad as what the world can seem to be. Like, you would agree, the news, the news always has negative stuff. And they love disasters, they love, well, they don't love it, but they report on that. But I would say that it's probably more spiteful and negative than it's ever been in the history. I mean, we look at the stuff that's happening now with the Deputy Prime Minister. You know, there's nothing that positive news comes later in the
bulletin. Yeah, it does. And what do you see throughout that? You see affairs, you see murders, you see car accidents, you see Donald Trump doing something stupid again. That's what you see. And you would say 80% of what you see is negative. Even sometimes with sport, you know, if a side loses, they talk it up, you know, such and such in trouble with their second straight loss, rather than focusing on the positive. And I think that's Maurice Gleitzman's talked about in his role. It's a 2-year term. He's going to try and promote the value of stories for young people in developing some of those key areas. You've got resilience, empathy. With empathy is a real big one. Some of those kids having empathy for each other and things. Smart thinking, optimism, and hope. And those some of those things that get pushed under the rug. A little bit, as you said, they're the things that come later. Mm. We talk about all the bad things and we bring each other down when we should be focusing on, not just focusing on these good things, but letting the kids know there is lots of great things out there. You can have hope and optimism for a bright future for yourself. And
that's right.
You don't have to be dictated to by what you see on social media and the news and those sorts of things.
And the reason why stories are powerful in this way is because you can make, you know, we all construct stories in, around these certain bleak events, but that there can be hope and love inside these events. And getting back to his Felix series, that's really that's how Gleitzman balances that so well in those books, is that it's this bleak subject matter, you know, an orphan living in Nazi occupation, but you know, the human capacity, as it says, for love and friendship is a real mark of that series. And I think that's going to help kids, and this is what he says, you know, that's going to help kids understand, if we're giving them stories where love can overcome, like you said, empathy can overcome, you know, really dark times, then that's going to help kids surely, like later on in life. And we think of, I mentioned 9/11 at the outset of the story. You know, there's so much, there was so much tragedy in that story, so much violence. You know, the footage that we all saw was horrible back then. But then, you know, there's so many great stories from 9/11 as well. You know, just strangers helping strangers, and the firemen and firewomen who stayed on. You know, there's so much at a horrific event. There is hope and love in that story.
There is. And one of the things the stories can do that I think gets lost on the kids, that we don't get the opportunity to teach them as much, is looking for that theme within the stories and a lesson to be learned. You know, one of the big things I find, you know, and you would find too when you get to 5-6, is, you know, the bullying, and it can be a subtle bullying and those things, and the ability to overcome it and believe in yourself. And there are plenty of stories and plenty of books and things out there that really promote that. And I think getting the kids to read that and understand the theme and understand the message and the lesson that they can learn from these, that goes with those ideas of empathy and hope and belief in yourself and things, can be so powerful, because we can't do everything. And I know for us, you know, independent reading time, every day the kids get at least half an hour. Well, there's what 30, 60, 90, you know, 150 minutes, it's 2.5 hours a week where they can be really reading some really positive messages and things to really build them up. It's very important.
Yeah, and I'd just like to finish off, Adam, with the last part of the article, which is all about him saying that children's stories are powerful, and adults need to buy into them as well. You know, there's nothing trivial about what an 8-year-old reads. It's just as sophisticated what they're reading and how they're reading as reading as an adult. And you know, I think children's stories are just as powerful as adult stories. So
exactly. So I suppose we want to throw it to our listeners, if you've got some powerful stories that you've read that you want to share that others may pick up on and can promote in their classroom or add to their class libraries, chuck us a message on Facebook, and that way lots of people can see it and potentially have an impact in their classroom.
Well, Adam, the tables have been turned, and you know, a lot of people used to laugh. I know some of our old friends on the podcast have laughed at this, Piercy, and that. Like, I used to always say, you know, that Adam got the anecdote of the Christmas episode. So I'm just going to say, you did get the anecdote of the Christmas episode, and I'm giving it to you for the episode in 2018, Adam.
And I don't think I actually remember that, because I think when we were seeing this, I said, I had a great anecdote, and you just went with it, and I didn't actually check that out. So you can have the next two cherries,
you know,
for that one.
I'm looking forward to this, because... it's the start of the year and we've always got fresh ones, so over to you.
He's a good man. To set the scene of this one, I think I've spoken about an anecdote in the past or story in the past where in my first couple of years of teaching, I ran into a grade prep who was doing a poo behind the dumpster. He hadn't learned to use the toilets, and he'd, I think I've spoken about it before. And chasing him around, he wouldn't pull his pants up.
It is never less funny.
I've still got that image of him just squatting behind the dumpster, and just the look, probably there was the disbelief on my face, and his look of almost... You know, he was worried.
Just for our listeners, that's a chopper going over the house.
Yeah, looking for Tony Foster, I think. Sorry. He's on the run again.
A chopper going over the studio,
So this is a lead-up, and it happened to a friend of mine who's currently teaching prep. And so the story goes that they were teaching during the day, and everything was going really, really well. And it got to lunchtime, and you know, the kids come up to you and talk and do all those sorts of things, and they got through their lunch and she packed them up, and she was at her desk doing some things when she glanced over and saw something on the floor near her chair.
Dear me.
So she's had a bit of a look at it.
It wasn't a dropped Mars bar, was it, Adam?
Well, the way the story goes, and this is 100% true, that she kind of looked at it and thought, could it be? So to check if it was, she went over there, picked it up with the bare hands, and gave it the sniff test.
Hang on.
And actually realised that for some reason one of the preps had not been wearing underpants.
And Adam, who is this staff member that walked over with no gloves on and picked it up? Who is this?
The log toucher, I've dubbed this person. But it's fallen through the things and the kid hasn't said anything and she hasn't noticed.
Oh,
and
no.
There it is on the floor. Now, what I want you to come back to is at the start of the year, when it's busy, things go through your head, and the preps aren't thinking clearly. They're still learning.
But
and
Adam,
sort of
does
stuff.
It go? Does it go through your head to go over and pick it up? It goes over. It goes through my head to maybe go over and get.
Because this is not. Because I know this is a teacher from our school. This is not
just
from
bend
our
the knees ever so slightly and just take
have a little bit of a
quick
look.
Sniff. And, what is going on here?
Because I don't think, well, the way I want to go with this anecdote is, because it's, I know it's a bit based and that sort of stuff, but I don't really think people understand some of these things that actually happen to teachers. Because I always come back to, that's true about me, I come back to on my rounds when I had a kid go, Mr. Lars, I'm not feeling very well, and I went, well, let's get you down, and then they just spewed all over my shoes. Yes. Kids on camp wet themselves and do those things. I don't think people understand that how often, it doesn't happen that often, but that these things do occur.
Yes.
And for that teacher to sort of go, is it? And just in that heat of the moment, was it my school? It was another friend from another school.
Was it a clean break, Adam? Do you know whether it just...
No, I don't know.
Oh, sorry.
I didn't ask those questions.
Everyone was thinking it.
Everyone was thinking it, but it was just, you almost sit there and listen to it and you sort of squint at them and go,
no, these,
really?
You're absolutely right. These are stories that don't, in all seriousness, you don't hear in other workplaces. Maybe nursing, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely,
you know,
nursing.
Certain accidents there, but this is, I think it's
you didn't hear an accountant going, I was doing someone's taxes and they weed all over the floor. Oh, it doesn't happen that way, but I think...
What was the aftermath? I think a lot of our listeners, what kind of aftermath was there here? Do you know?
I think after the sniff test, it was confirmed what it was, and it disappeared, and the story was passed around.
I shake my head in utter disbelief.
I do believe that the Coles nearby was sold out of hand sanitizer.
I cannot believe it.
Because for you and I have never taught prep, and that's where those sort of things occur.
And I know this is going to be just disgusting, but it must have been oddly shaped or something to make you want to go over. I am so confused about what that is that I am going to go and pick it up.
Unbelievable stuff.
Because if you thought you knew what it was, you wouldn't put your hand near it.
And I had to share it because on one hand it is unbelievable, but I think as teachers go, they're going to have something in the back of their mind, particularly primary school teachers going, that reminds me of the time. That reminds me of the time where this happened. Or like I've had to go at my school for a long time. I was the only male. If there was an accident in the boys' toilets, I was on deck. I'd have to go in there and flush a toilet or clean something up. It's just the way it is. And it's not part of your selection criteria. It's not number six. So if a kid does this in the toilets, what's your reaction? That's what are you going to do? It just becomes part of what you do as a teacher. And I'm never grossed out by it in the sense that I instantly feel for that student.
Well, you're in work mode. You're in work mode.
You are. And I want to make it right, particularly if it's clear that it's happened to a student. If you go to the toilet and it's just there and no one knows, we get on with the business. But if it happens to a student, that empathy kicks in straight away, that you want to get on top of it. And particularly if there's any kids who are going to make a big deal out of it, you really get in there and try and make sure that, you know, it's a big deal, it's not made out of it, or you try and turn it around so they're not talking about it too much. It's a tough thing, but...
I think all good teachers would do that, I think so. Definitely. But, I mean, and it's one of those things that, you know, you can talk about later, like we are, and have, I guess, a bit of a laugh about it. I guess if there's any listeners out there, you know, to finish off, if you've got something, like Adam said, that utterly shocked you, you know, those ones, not necessarily to do with going to the loo, but it just could be something you thought, I never thought I'd see that.
Yeah.
Gee, we'd love to hear it.
Absolutely. Well, that brings an end to our first episode for 2018. And it's, as we said off the top, it's really great to be back behind the microphone. And we are planning, Rick, to have another one next week. We know we've got some busy weeks following that where we won't be able to get one up. But definitely next week. And again, we want to throw to our loyal listeners that we've had a few more likes over the Christmas break, and everyone sort of checks in with us. It's always fantastic. We're always very grateful.
We are very grateful. And I've had some conversations, I'm sure you have too, Adam, over the last couple of weeks with colleagues who have passed the podcast on to either someone in their family who's involved in education or a friend, and we're really thankful for that. Thanks very much.
Very much so.
My last word, Adam, just is to male members of my staff who did mention to me at our Year 6 camp last week that they'd like a mention. So all I'm going to say, Adam, is well done to two men who cooked a barbecue.
So, from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and the two of us have been, for the first time in 2018, two regular teachers.